Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the Choctaw Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, Choctaw. In the Liberty Hill, Texas, today is May the 1st, 2014. It is this 3-2018. We will start our first service today with a song entitled Footsteps of Yahshua. Sweetly Yahweh heard me calling, come follow me, and we see where the footprints falling lead us to thee. Footprints of Yahshua that make the pathway glow, we will follow the step of Yahshua where they go. Though they lead o'er the cold dark mountain seeking his sheep, all along the solemn fountains helping the weak, footprints of Yahshua that make the pathway glow, we will follow the step of Yahshua where'er they go. If they lead to the temple holy, preaching the word, or in homes of the poor and lonely, serving the young, footprints of Yahshua that make the pathway glow, we will follow the steps of Yahshua where'er they go. Then when at last on high he sees us, our journey done, we will rest where the step of Yahshua in at his throne. Footprints of Yahshua that make the pathway glow, we will follow the step of Yahshua where'er they go. Part 4, Judgment for the Living. Question. Who announces the judgment for the living? Now we see that by the testimony of the prophets, by the parables, and by the ceremonial type, Elohim has wrought the towering structure of the fact that, number one, the judgment is the harvest, the separation of the tares from the wheat, the end of the world. Well, let's read that again. Because see, Verlis Johnson, he says the judgment is the harvest, and he left out the preposition. But you put the preposition in there, and this is the way it reads. For the judgment is in the time of the harvest, in the 12th parabolic hour. The separation of the tares from the wheat. At the end of the world. Okay. Or in the end of the world. In the 12th parabolic hour. Number two, for the judgment and the harvest embrace two phases, two periods. For the former is for the dead, and the latter is for the living. Number three, one takes place according unto the records in the books in the heaven of the sanctuary. The other takes place simultaneously in the church on the earth, and in the books in the heaven. Number four, the very fact that the subject is now being revealed in its fullness testifies that we are just on the verge of passing out of the former and into the latter phase period. We are therefore living in the last days of the earth's history, Tract 3, page 88, paragraph 1. It is therefore evident that the Vitihotif had no knowledge of when the judgment for the living would begin. And I might add my comment here, and Brother Charlton didn't either, as far as the judgment for the living for the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Now, the judgment for the living actually began for the Seventh-day Adventist Church, as Brother Johnson announced it in 1970, when he restored the sanctuary system. All right? The sanctuary system was restored for Gilead Center. Gilead Center was the third feeding pasture for the Seventh-day Adventists, and Roland Johnson was a prophet appointed over the candlestick of Laodicea, the seventh candlestick, making him the prophet to the Seventh-day Adventist Church. So, yeah, judgment began at the House of Yahweh, the Seventh-day Adventist Church, at Gilead Center in 1970. Brother Johnson wrote a tract and said, We're all sevens. We're in the general living. The seventh seal is open. Okay? So he has to let that stand. Because Esau, and typical Esau, was in charge of the candlestick. And making him in charge of Mount Edom, which is a designation for the Adventist Church. Okay, now Jacob, his spiritual twin brother, Elijah David, was there all the time. And from 1970 on. And he's the one that has to wait for antitypical Esau to disinherit his birthright and to lose the position of being the progenitor of the righteous line to bring forth the 144,000. Because that was Verlus Johnson's privilege as being the firstborn, was to bring forth the 144,000. And so Yahweh gave Verlus Johnson 33 and a half years to prove himself, to see if he couldn't measure up and become righteous and be the true leader of the house of Israel to bring forth the 144,000. But as it was in the top, it's impossible. That was impossible. And so, but the record shows that he was given the opportunity. And 33 and a half years is a long time to have to wait out a period for the righteous, because all during that 33 and a half years of his term at Texas and with the Gilead Center, it was co-mingled with the wheat and the tares. You had the good people, the righteous people that lived with all the light that they had, that had come and gone through the ranks of Gilead Center for 33 and a half years while I was there. And I witnessed it. I brought a lot of men that came in and went out, over the years. So, as we continue here, it says, our reading, we're on page 6, that there should be a climax of some kind in the judicial work at this particular point of the Scriptures, Revelation 6, 14 to 17, is not a mystery. It's being stamped with the events which end the reign of sin, and this being realized by even the sinners is a very good indication that during the sixth seal, the judgment of the dead closes. Okay. Now, isn't this amazing? And Brother Johnson thought the sixth seal closed in 1970. That's why he's saying it. And the preparation for the judgment of the living begins, but the sixth seal closed in 2002. With him at the helm. It is a dreadful day for the wicked. Well, so who was classified then as a wicked when the sixth seal closed at Gilead Center, which represents the closing work for the whole Seventh-day Adventist Church? Tract 15, page 58, paragraph 1. Even now, in the closing hours of the gospel period, the church says, I am rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing. Now, Rhodes Johnson is writing this in 1998. And now he's bringing this up to present tense in 1998. He said, even now, in the closing hours of the gospel period, right? The gospel period for the Seventh-day Adventist Church was for the whole the duration of the judgment for the dead from 1844 to 2002. So now Brother Johnson is writing this 4 years before the gospel period with the three angels' message closes for the fourth group of laborers, in which he was the last of the fourth group of laborers called under that ninth hour call in Matthew 20 verse 5. Those seven deadness that were called to work in the vineyard for the 10th and 11th parabolic hours. The ninth hour closed out in 1844 to start the Adventists on their journey in the 10th and 11th parabolic hour. And so Verla Johnson, having the 11th parabolic hour for Gilead Center alone, closes out the judgment of the dead, the sixth seal, the sixth trumpet. He closed out all the sixes. And all the time, he was given all the sevens 33 and a half years earlier. About 33 years earlier. He was given all the sevens, showing that the sevens overlapped the six. But he had to have that for the house of Esau. He had to see what he could do with all the sevens, being a complete number. Because, see, Brother Johnson was made the angel of the seventh candlestick. That's the number seven right there that he was appointed over, the seventh candlestick and the seventh dominion. He was the one that was put in charge of the seventh dominion. The seventh dominion began in 1844 with the Adventist. The seventh dominion ran all the way up to 2002, closing out the judgment of the dead. Rose Johnson was put in charge of the last generation and the last feeding pasture during the dominion of number seven dominion. Okay, now it says, even now in the closing hours, 1998, Rose Johnson said, of the gospel period, the church says, he should have said, the Seventh-day Adventist church says, well, Rose Johnson, being the prophet over Gilead Center, which is the last branch of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, so he's talking about his own church here. He's not talking about the Seventh-day Adventist Church removed. He's talking about his own church. He should have said, even now in the closing hours of the gospel period for the Seventh-day Adventist Church, in which we are bringing the close of it, with our message of the sanctuary system restored. So if they don't wake up now, if we don't all wake up and sanctify ourselves, then we cannot sanctify the Seventh-day Adventist Church and expect them to be sanctified. If we can't sanctify the headquarters ourselves, which we've been in charge of, then how is the whole rest of the body of the Adventists going to be sanctified to bring forth the remnant, which would be the 144,000. No way. So anyway, Verlis Johnson is speaking for Gilead Center here as the headwaters for the Adventist Church. He's saying, I am rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing. Okay. Neither of the truth nor of the prophet, though in fact she is wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. Revelation 3:16-17. And about to be spewed out. Well, that's exactly what happened. 4 years later, Gilead Center was spewed out. If she, Gilead Center, fails now to anoint her eyes with this fresh extra oil, she didn't know where that fresh extra oil was. But Brother Johnson was telling them in 1998 that we've got to get this fresh extra oil. And sure enough, 2002, July the 14th, 2002, when I got this message from heaven, and I said, I just got a message from heaven. Here it is. That was the fresh extra oil. Okay? What would have happened if Brother Johnson had accepted and did exactly what he was told to do. He would have repented, and then he would have placed me in charge of the congregation. He would have fulfilled Romans 9, where it says, the elder shall serve the younger. He'd have had to step down. And then Yahweh gave me the message of Matthew 20 to identify the five groups of laborers. He gave me the truth of the seventh grain of mustard, the mustard seed, the seventh grain of doctrine, which is the blood of the everlasting covenant. I could have set him up with the blood of the everlasting covenant, showed Gilead Sinner how to be sanctified by assimilating and appropriating that blood of the everlasting covenant. So that was given to me. I would have showed them what their new name change was going to be. The Yeshua or righteousness, Jeremiah 23. This is the name whereby he shall be called the Yeshua or righteousness. And I said, and then when we come through the judgment, this first judgment that's pending right here in front of us, I said, the atonement, 2002, when we come through that, all united and all with our sins completely taken care of among us, ourselves, making everything right like Matthew 18 says that we're to do first, then we come to the atonement, we get all of our sins blotted out, we move forward. Then we move from here and we go down to Liberty Hill, Texas, where we ended up coming when we got separated anyway in 2002. That would be exactly what would happen to church. They'd have sold out everything just like we did, and they would have followed us. And we'd have come down here and we'd have got set up where Yahweh would have led us, and everybody would have been living together on a campground. The elder would have been serving the younger. And we'll be moving on together. But that was not to be. Let's go ahead. Brother Johnson is talking here now. I'm on page 6 of his tract, Calling to the Vanguard. And being unmindful of her wretched condition, she is now ready not only to reject the last message that comes to her. So Brother Johnson is speaking for a Gilead sinner and for himself and didn't even realize it. So it's... He could have very well instead have said, she is now ready. He should have said, we are now ready not only to reject the last message that will come to us through a messenger of Yahweh's own choosing with warnings and reproofs just before the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh, Malachi 4:5. And that's taken from Tract 7, paragraph... page 24, paragraph 2. Now, Brother Johnson goes on now. His tract goes on with these are Brother's words. This shows that the shepherd rod is with the last message. I put the prepositions in there so you'll know. The shepherd rod is, he says, is the last message. Well, the shepherd rod is not the last message. The shepherd rod has recorded of the last message before the judgment for the living began. Okay. So where was that recording found at? It was found in the latter rain of truth. Okay. The latter rain of truth fell upon Brother Johnson in July the 14th, 2002, with that message I gave him from heaven that day. That was your latter rain of truth. That was, and that came through the teachings of the shepherd rod. Okay. So it says, in the day that thy walls are to be built, in that day shall the decree be far removed. In that day also he shall come even unto thee from Assyria, and from the fortified cities, and from the fortress, even unto the river, and from sea to sea, and from mountain to mountain, Micah 7:11-12. Since this decree is removed in the day that the everlasting kingdom of the heaven, the church of David purified, is restored, in the day that the saints are fortified, for the decree has no effect on them, if they are fortified. In that day, it declares inspiration. There shall be a great gathering from the Assyria, and from the fortified cities, even from sea to sea, and mountain to mountain. Therefore this message, the shepherd wrought, is the one that precedes the harvest of the earth, the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh, the judgment for the living, the day in which all things are to be restored. Mark 9:12. One at TGR 28, page 15. Now let's read that again. Therefore this message of the shepherd's rod. See, he just said the shepherd's rod. This message of the shepherd's rod. No, it's of the shepherd's rod is with the one. Notice I put the preposition, is with the one that precedes the harvest of the earth. With the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh, before the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh, before the judgment for the living begins, before the day which all things are to be restored. Mark 9:12. See, I put all your prepositions in there, making this thing read correctly. And so it says, since V.T. Holliff and the Shepherd's Rod message has, as has been previously proven, to be the antitype of John the Baptist and his work in which there was no harvest, no judgment for the living, nor the restoring of all things, it is evident that the message brought to view in the foregoing quotation. 1 TGR 28, page 15, was the message of the shepherd's rod brought by Leviti Holliff in 1930 to 1970. Therefore, the shepherd's rod is the message that precedes the harvest, the judgment for the living, and restoration of all things. Well, did Brother Johnson restore all things? Whenever he succeeded the rod? No, he didn't restore all things. Well, where does this fit then? Okay, now here I'm going to show you something. He said that the V.T. Holliff had the antitypical John the Baptist work, and John the Baptist did not restore all things. But the prophecy says Elijah must first come restore all things, and then the Messiah comes. Okay. John the Baptist is antitypical Elijah. What did John the Baptist restore? He restored all of the sanctuary system that Yahweh came and fulfilled. John the Baptist, what he had restored. John the Baptist did restore all things in his day. He restored the doctrines of the sanctuary system restored. And by proving this, when Yahshua came to the baptism of John the Baptist, he baptized him in the River Jordan along with a bunch of other converts, he put the finishing touches on the restoration of the sanctuary. Because he baptized the high priest, Yahshua, and he witnessed him being anointed by the Holy Spirit, but the dove descended upon him from heaven, and then he witnessed the voice from heaven saying, "This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased." And what did Yahshua say to John the Baptist? John the Baptist says, "I have need to be baptized of you." He said, "No, suffer it to be so, for it becomes us to fulfill all righteousness." Okay? So when John the Baptist baptized Yahshua, he fulfilled all righteousness, and that gave then Yahshua the title or the license then to become the high priest and to fulfill Daniel 9:24-27. And I'll go read that to you right now. Now here's what Yahshua fulfilled after John the Baptist baptized him. After he was anointed by the Holy Spirit, Yahshua then went up from there and into the wilderness, and he fasted for 40 days. And he came out of the 40-day fasting, and Satan came and tempted him. Yahshua defeated Satan, and then he entered upon his work have been representing the King of Israel and the King of Kings and the Sovereign of Sovereign. He started his work of ministry, fulfilling exactly what John the Baptist had prophesied. John the Baptist did indeed restore all things. Okay, now, and here's what Yahshua then, after his baptism, here's what he fulfilled of John the Baptist's prophecy. That's reading why he said John the Baptist was the greatest of all prophets. But yet John the Baptist never prophesied one prophecy. He never prophesied one prophecy. But yet he performed the duties of the greatest prophet ever by following the transcript, by following the blueprint that was laid down to usher in the everlasting kingdom of heaven with baptizing of Yahshua. This is what John the Baptist did. And here's what it enabled then Yahshua to do. Then Yahshua was then qualified and anointed to fulfill all the prophecies then from that moment on clear to the end of time. This is what gives Yahshua the power and the authority. For he said he spoke as one having authority. So that's what they witnessed of it. They said Yahshua spoke as one having an authority. So everything he spoke meant on is meeting its fulfillment right here in the 12th hour. All because of John the Baptist's act of cooperating with Yahshua to fulfill all righteousness. Alright, so Daniel 9:24-27, and this is what Yahshua then was able to fulfill after his baptism. Start with verse 24 of Daniel 9. 70 weeks are determined upon thy people and upon thy holy city to finish the transgression and to make an end of sins and to make reconciliation for iniquity and to bring in everlasting righteousness and to seal up the vision and prophecy and to anoint the most holy. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem unto the Messiah the Prince shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks, and the street shall be built again, and the wall, even in troublous time. And after 62 weeks, shall the Messiah be cut off. And so we know that Yahshua in the Antitype was cut off at Kermit, Texas, 2002. Okay, and that had to be. And in order for Yahshua to come forth a second time and to fulfill all righteousness, he had to be cut off in the Antitype at Kermit, Texas. Okay, and he had to then come forth from that spiritual crucifixion, and he had to come forth triumph once again, and he anointed his servant David to take the place of the one that was cut off, but not for himself. And the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city. What city? What's the people of the prince? Yahshua is the prince. Who's the people? That's his appointed servant. Okay. And the sanctuary and the end thereof shall be with a flood. Okay. A flood of false doctrine is going to take the church away, the city. And unto the end of the war, desolations are determined. Okay. That's the spiritual warfare. And he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. And in the midst of the week, he shall cause a sacrifice and the oblation to cease. And for the overspread of the abominations, he shall make it desolate, even until the consummation, and that determined shall be poured upon the desolate. And we know that Gilead Center was made desolate as an omen and a token that the whole Seventh-day Adventist church had been made desolate and planed off, fulfilling Zechariah chapter 4, verse 7. And I'll read that to you right quick. Chapter 4, verse 7. It says that, who art thou, O great mountain? Okay, this question is asked by Zechariah. Who art thou, O great mountain, Seventh-day Adventist Church? Before Zerubbabel, that's the governor of Judah, of Judea. And Judah is one of the 12 tribes of Israel, and that's the lawgiver. Thou shalt become a plain. Okay. So the Seventh-day Adventist Church became a plain before Judah, which is the house of David in charge of Judah in his last day. Judah had his representative there at Gilead Center 2002. Who art thou, O great mountain? That great mountain was Mount Gilead. The mountain before that was Mount Carmel. The mountain before that was Mount Bashan. Okay, three feeding pastures, three mountains for the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And so the question is asked, who art thou, O great mountain, Mount Gilead, representing the Adventist Church, representing that one big mountain? Before Zerubbabel, the governor of Judea, and David is the governor of Judea at this time, in this prophecy, when it's being fulfilled, thou shalt become a plain. And what happened? As soon as we were separated from Kermit, Texas, 2002, Gilead Center was planed off. And he shall bring forth the headstone, Yahshua, represented by the headstone. And you notice the stone represents a person. Thereof with shoutings crying, grace, grace unto it. This is a fulfilling of all righteousness. And he's making this covenant with many for 1 week, and that 1 week is a 7-year period, mathematically, it equates out. And that's with the house of David. And that's with the house of David being in charge of the investigative judgment of Ezekiel 9 being kicked in, and going and marking all of the worthy, ones that are to be sealed with the three seals of Revelation 3:12, and keep that in mind now, Yahweh's name, and the name of the city of my Yahweh, and Yahweh's new name. Now Yahweh has his name, original name, the Hebrew name, and then he has a new name that he gives to those that have received his seal of the Sabbath, first name of Yahweh. And then they get the name of the new city, the new Jerusalem coming down. Okay. And what's the name of that? What's the name of that new city? Well, you have Ezekiel 48 that gives you a little bit of clue of what that name is. And it's the last verse in Ezekiel 48's prophecy. It was round about 18,000 measures. I'm reading verse 35 of Ezekiel 48. It was round about 18,000 measures, and the name of the city from that day shall be the Yahweh is there. Okay. So what's the new name of Jerusalem? The Yahweh is there. It's his name. It's Yahweh's name. Yahweh's he's the name of the city Jerusalem. It's Yahweh, or Yahweh Elohim. Okay? How about that? Let's continue on now with our reading from Brother Johnson's tract, Calling the Vanguard. We're on page 6, next to the last paragraph. It says, for the Revelator, moreover, was told that the thing about which he was to write were to be hereafter, Revelation 4:1. That's after 96 A.D., when he had the vision. Furthermore, for the sealing of the 144,000 takes place in the period of the sixth seal, just prior unto the opening of the seventh seal. Okay. So now he says, furthermore, the sealing of the 144,000 takes place in the period of the sixth seal, just prior unto the opening of the seventh seal. Alright. Let's just let that stand up with Brother W. Johnson. But Brother Johnson, he was judged in 2002, and the 144,000 hasn't shown up. And he said he was that 144,000 had been assigned to his movement. And he said the seventh seal opened in 1970. hearing 28 years later, he's writing this tract and saying, furthermore, the sin of the 144,000 takes place in the period of the sixth seal. So he's saying in 1998 that the 144,000 has already been sealed. And he said the sixth seal ended in 1970. He said the seventh seal opened in 1970. So what is he trying to tell us, Donnie Kermit, in 1998? 28 years after he had already prophesied that the 144,000 were sealed in 1970. By 1970. So what he's saying is, if they were sealed before 1970, which is what he's saying, then they were sealed in the 10th parabolic hour. You see? But Brother Sant didn't know what... He knew that he was in the 11th hour. He prophesied. He wrote it. But then he should have known that if 144,000 was sealed before the judgment of the living began, and he prophesied that the judgment of the living began with him in 1970. So he'd had to know that then Vitalis was the one that had the sealing message. And he said Vitalis had that fourth angel, Revelation 7, 1-4, that come to seal the 144,000. He said that Vitalis had that sealing. And he said the 144,000 was sealed by 1970 in the 10th parabolic hour. But yet, it says that the prophecy says that they're sealed in the end. And the 12th parabolic hour is the end time. So you see, so Verlus Ossius assumed that all these things had been fulfilled 28 years earlier. And so he's going on now with the future, as now are making himself not Joshua, the son of Nun anymore, but now he's Joshua, the son of Josedek, assuming that all that he had printed and written the first 28 years had already been fulfilled, and now he's moving on. He's living in a dizzy, imaginary world. He's living in the twilight zone. Brother Johnson is just far removed from reality, totally living in the twilight zone. Alright, but here let's go on with what Brother Johnson is. Let's just try to see his reasoning in all this. He says, furthermore, the sealing of the 144,000 takes place in the period of the sixth seal. Well, the sixth seal was from 1844 clear up to 1970. According to this, just prior to the opening of the seventh seal, and the seventh seal opens in the 12th hour, but Brother Johnson said that it opened in the beginning of the 11th hour with him. Let's see where this is going to go. And he's quoting Revelation 6, 12, 7 to 17, and Revelation 7, 1 to 17, and Revelation 8, 1. Shortly before the end of all things. Tract number 9, page 53 by B.T. Hollis, through page 54. It is herein shown that the sealing of the 144,000, Revelation 7, 1 to 4, the shepherd's rod message, takes place in the period of the sixth seal. There it is right there. Brother Johnson just said it. From 1930 to 1970, he said that was in the sixth seal, and that the seventh seal brings the end of all things. Well, the seventh seal does bring the end of all things, because the seventh seal is recorded in the book of Revelation from chapter 8 through chapter 22 is a recording of the whole book of the seventh seal. From 8th chapter of Revelation through 22. The first six seals are from Revelation 1 through 8 recorded. So, in other words, the book of the seven seals is opened up in the whole book of Revelation from chapter 1 to 22. Okay. So now, Brother Sean said that he had the seven seal and it opened in 1970. Well, then, did he teach Revelation 8 through 22? Did he teach this then and chronologically fulfill and unroll the scroll on those 14 chapters left for the seventh seal from Revelation 8 to 22? No, he didn't. He didn't have no light on it. Okay. For the shift of God must take place in the period of the sixth seal, and that the seventh seal brings the end of all things. At this point, I want to take you back to track 15, page 88, paragraph 2, to establish harmony between its statement and the statement in track 9, page 53 through 54, because as it stands now, there is a contradiction between the two quotes. Using the quotation from track 9 as the foundation, because it's in the harmony with the type, we can establish the truth intended in track 15, page 88, paragraph 2. What we are seeing here in the track 15 is that the 144,000 had to be sealed before the judgment of the living. Okay. Now, you see, Elijah Davis said at the 144,000, if they are sealed by now, it had to start in 2002 at the opening up of the judgment of the living, and that they're sealed in the 12th parabolic hour in the judgment of the living time, which is, I believe, is correct. Let's go on with Willis Johnson's rendering though of this. He says, therefore, they had to be sealed in the period of the sixth seal. And he's saying that the sixth seal runs from 1930 to 1970 with the rod. They could not be judged before the truth of Revelation 7, 1 to 4 was given. Well, the truth of Revelation 7, 1 to 4 is a sealing of the 144,000 was given. Hence, they had to be sealed in the period of the sixth seal to prepare them for the judgment for the living, beginning with the opening of the seventh seal. It is well to note that you cannot judge a person for something until after the truth or facts have been given. So, I give Brother Johnson the latest news from heaven in July the 14th, 2002. And this is a true statement now, what he just said. And he was judged then, on the 2 months later, at the Day of Atonement, he was judged. From the weight of that message that I gave him 2 months earlier, he rejected it, and so he was judged according to his reception of that message. If he had accepted it and done everything I told him to, he had come through the judgment. He'd still be here today with us. Rejecting it, he's in his grave, and the flock is scattered, and the church was separated. Okay. This is why the 144,000 had to be sealed in the period of the sixth seal, before the opening of the seventh seal, for the judgment for the living. Knowing that Elohim's laws of the judgment are righteous laws that show that he is just in his dealings with man. Now that we have been brought face to face with the gospel of the kingdom, the harvest, and the judgment for the living, Revelation 18:1-4, we are under the solemn obligation brought to view in Tract 4, page 65, and the command of bring ye all the tithe into the storehouse, being placed in this particular chapter of the Bible, shows why and peradventure that Elohim entrusts his storehouse to the messengers of the special truth for this time. Those who live in the period of the old message, the judgment of the dead, okay, from 1844 to 1970, this is what Brother Johnson is saying, under the sixth seal, we're under obligations to support it. But now that we are entering into the period of the new message, the judgment of the living, we are duty-bound to support it. Okay, that's why the members of Gilead Center paid their tithes and offerings at Gilead Center, not to the Adventist Church, because Gilead Center represented the Adventist Church. So that's the reason why they brought their tithes there. They were giving it to the Adventist Church. That was only with the commission of the three angels' messages. No longer is there either need or justification for our supporting the old message by itself, aloof from the new. Thus we can see that since the shepherd's rod message took place under the sixth seal, those that were sealed by that message in the end of the sixth seal are now under obligation to support the new message, the judgment for the living, and the seventh seal, the fifth angel's message. So here Brother Johnson is only operating on the three angels' messages. That's all that was given to him, which was given to the whole Adventist church, and that's all that they had during the judgment of the dead, was the three angels' message. But yet he is saying that he's in the judgment of the living, that he's got the fifth angel's message. So he's saying the Adventists, that they're obligated to come and join him now and start paying their tithes and offerings to him. That's what he's telling them. Okay. Let's continue on with the Brother Johnson's talking here now. He says, we can better understand this requirement of the support when we realize that the top of Carmel withered. He's talking about Amos 1-2, showing where Carmel was no more, the rod was no more. 1937, the top of Carmel withered and Vita Habitat. And when we look at the Davidian organization who left their designated feeding pasture, Old Mount Carmel, Micah 6:9 and 7:14, and established a new headquarters at the new Mount Carmel after Brother Hollis' death, which then dissolved in 1962. Okay. Subsequently, the flock scattered and divided into several different groups under different leaders in the different parts of the United States and Canada, void of the inspiration and having no type and no prophetic interval. This in itself is proof that the top of Carmel did with it. For the prophecy of Ezekiel 4-39 shows that Elohim is to bring his people Israel into the wilderness of the people by the antitypical Moses with the shepherd's rod, Vitti Halef, and plead with them face to face, causing them to pass under the rod and to bring them into the bond of the covenant, the fifth angel, Revelation 18:1-4, and to purge out the rebels from among them. Okay, the word, and after the word rod in verse 37 shows that after the people passed under the shepherd's rod movement, they were then to become a part of the antitypical Joshua's movement, the bond of the covenant, wherein the rebels would be purged out, and it was in the type, and they would not go into the land. We know that this is the truth because it is according to the type. But it didn't fulfill his verse. Verse is saying that all this took place with him, that they left and came under the bond of the covenant, and so forth. Well, I want to show you something now. Here's the key thing to consider in all this, what I just read you. He's saying that the prophecy of Ezekiel 20:34-39 shows that Elohim was to bring his people Israel into the wilderness of the people by the antitypical Moses. Okay. So, and he's saying earlier that Vitti Halef was this antitypical Moses. So, and the typical Moses did bring him into the wilderness of the people. Okay. With the shepherd rod, Vitti Halef. Okay. And so, spiritually speaking, that's what Vitti Halef did. And plead with them face to face, causing them to pass under the rod. So if he could get the Adventists to come into the wilderness of the people and pass under the rod teaching, then they could come into the bond of the covenant, and the fifth angel of Revelation 18:1-4. But the truth of the matter is that Vitti Halef is antitypical Moses. Brought the people into the hill countries of Judea. He didn't bring them into the wilderness of Sinai. He brought them into the hill country of Judea. Because Waco, Texas is just 100 miles north of us, which is considered hill country. It's not considered wilderness. Brother Johnson was told to pull up his roots where he lived down there in Waco. In 1970, he didn't want to go back to that desert in West Texas. But Yahweh gave him a sign that he should, and he obeyed the sign, and he said, well, this is where I'm supposed to go, then I will. So he took the headquarters of the rod, with a new name, Isaac Branch, Davidian Seventh Adventist, and he took them to the desert. And that's where they spent essentially 40 years, and that's where they're still at today. Because they didn't pass on the rod and come into the bond of covenant. Gilead's sinner did not pass on the rod and come into the bond of covenant. That's the reason why they're still in the desert. That's why they're all dying in the desert today and have been cut off. Because they did not come on the rod into the bond of covenant. If they had come on the rod into the bond of covenant, then they could have led the whole remnant of the 144,000 right with them. Because that's what Esau's privilege was to gather the 144,000. But he had to come under the rod and into the bond of covenant first, leading the whole remnant of the 144,000. Because he didn't do this, then the message was delayed for 40 years. No, the message was delayed for 33 years. Because when Antipas Esau was cut off, then after 33 years with the Gilead Center, then Antipas Jacob then inherited the birthright, and now Antipas Jacob has got to restore and rebuild this tabernacle that has fallen down, and to cause the 144,000 to pass under the rod and into the bond of covenant. This has got to be fulfilled with Antipas Jacob, the second born, the one that was born again of the Spirit, that received and ended up with the birthright. Okay. The fifth angel of Revelation 18:1-4, and to purge out the rebels from among them. For the word, and after the word rod in verse 37 shows that after people passed under the shepherd rod movement, they were then to become a part of the Antipas Joshua's movement. Okay, so we know that and brother's talking about Joshua the son of Nun, but he's in 1998, and Joshua the son of Nun has been removed for 28 years in the past, so now he's dealing with Joshua the son of Josedek. He's picked up a new Joshua, but he's trying to make it look like they're one and the same. So it says the bond of the covenant, which the rebels would be purged out as it was in the type, and they would not go into the land. And what land is that? They would be purged out in the wilderness, which the Gilead Center was, and they would not go into the land of the hills countries of Judea, where the remnant ended up coming to, the wave sheaf, the vanguard. The vanguard, the name of this tract right here, they ended up coming, representing the house of David, to this hill country of Judea. Okay? This is the promised land for the spiritual Israel of today. We know that this is the truth because it is according unto the type. Those who do not obey Elohim's command and refuse to support the new message, their kingdom, harvest, and judgment for the living, are robbing Elohim and are cursed with a curse and barred from the land. Remember Achan and the type. It was Joshua that took the children of Israel into the land, and it is Antipas Joshua who is commissioned to first lead the wave sheaf, the vanguard, from the 144,000 first fruits into the kingdom. In the earth, the USA, as shown in Jeremiah 23:5-6, and then into the promised land, Israel, as pointed out in Jeremiah 33:14-16. Now, isn't this amazing? And Brother Johnson taught from 1970 to 1974 that we were going to go into the land under him as the Antipas Joshua, the son of Nun. And it didn't happen. Prophecy fell on his face. He made many false prophecies after that that didn't happen. And now he comes down in 1998 and he's renewing this thing with a new Joshua, the son of Joseph. Just pretending that the past 28 years is completely blocked from our memory, that there is nothing to be considered there anymore, that he has a new commission now. As the type reveals, the light being transmitted by the marvels of the typical events is a clear manifestation that there is a type for every incident of vital interest unto the Church of Yahweh, which are the only positive proofs and clear explanations of the divine providence. As there is no type for that which is false, teachers of the theories without a typical representation for their claims of the so-called Bible truth, and those who believe in them are as the blind leading the blind. That's exactly what Rhoda Johnson ended up doing. Blind leading the blind. For the types are worked out to expose the errors and reveal the truth. for the honest ones will shun the devil by the embracing of the facts and by walking in the light. Two Shepherd's Rod, Volume 2, page 255. When the time of the terrors, the children of the wicked one, Matthew 13:38, is come to his full, then will commence the harvest, and it will bring the end of the world. Matthew 13:30-40. Taking place in the end of the world, in the 12th parabolic hour, I might add, its preface is the gathering of the people by the Elijah's message. Brother Johnson now is saying that in 1992, when he wrote that Protestant Reformation Restored tract, he said that he was the Elijah. He finally evolved as Elijah. So now, when he says Elijah's message, he's saying that that's what he's printing right here. The last heaven-sent proclamation of the gospel, which is preached first to the church, just before the great and dreadful day of Yahweh, Malachi 4 or 5, and then into all the world during that long expected day, Tract 9, page 67. No judgment for the living, nor harvest in the rod period. Brother Johnson was still in the rod period. He was still with that name, Davidian, Branch Davidian. He's still in the rod period, whether he likes it or not, because that 40-year rod period was repeated because of his failure from 1930 to 1970 to deliver the goods. Yahweh repeated with Brother W. Johnson from 1970 to 2010. And when Brother Johnson finally came to his end in 2010, made it perfectly obvious that Yahweh was totally through with him, like he was with King Saul. He told Samuel that he had rejected King Saul many years before King Saul's 40-year period was up. But he let King Saul continue on until he committed real suicide in battle with the enemy. So Verlis Johnson, he died in 2012. This time for Gilead Center was 2010. Okay. Hence it is self-evident that the Elijah's message is in the two phases, two different periods of time, and by the two different servants as pointed out in the time. This brings the close. I say this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call. It's number 11. Click on the audio archive. We're going to close this service now with a song. Up above and just beyond the bright horizon by the Elijah David. Up above and just beyond the bright horizon is a land that is fairer than we know. A land flowing with milk and honey is a land where dwells eternal soul. Walking on that golden strand, hand in hand, greeting folks that we've never seen before. Oh, we'll take the place, everyone's a familiar face, and it shall remain that way forevermore. Up above and just beyond the bright horizon brings the dawning of the eternal day, where there's no need to light a candle, for the Father and the Son lights the way. Up above and just beyond the bright horizon, someday I'll take my flight on in the sky and get a first-hand view of the heavens and take refuge in the hope of eternal love. When my soul finally reaches that highest level, I will then speak in the Canaan's tongue, and then I'll join the ranks of the able, of the immortal, and forever young. Up above and just beyond the bright horizon is a place where my eyes long to see, and join with the saints of all ages, living for throughout eternity. Up above and just beyond the bright horizon is a land just beyond that distant star, is a land drips of milk and honey, and they tell me it's the greatest by far. Up above and just beyond the bright horizon, there is a land with no comparison by far. For it lies in the sides of the north, and the location of the bright and morning star. Up above and just beyond the bright horizon, is a land more glorious to behold. Abraham by faith looked for that city with the foundations of the purest gold. Up above and just beyond that bright horizon,